I will not make any straight talks to the students throughout this week, as usual during the Congress, but of course everybody will be at the Congress, you'll be at the Congress, and there will be a specific set of seats for you. The reason for this is to, so I can look over at this particular battery of seats and find out whether or not you're still alive or bored to death. And to present a little unity at the Congress. Now, the people who will be there are, for the most part, entirely sold on the idea that they know something about Dianetics and Scientology. They believe this. If they believe anything, they believe this. There will be a handful, one, two, three, dragged unwillingly from Milwaukee or someplace by Big Brother, who have never read anything and who know less anyhow. But there will be others who, for the most part, believe utterly that they know something about Dianetics and Scientology. I want to give you an idea here of the people who come to the Congress. For the most part, these people have not been trained in Dianetics and Scientology, and an amazing number of them have been trained, our former students and so on. But those who have not been trained present one of the most interesting pictures that you and I will ever behold. And I want to talk to you just for a moment about that person, because you meet this person all the time. There's nothing wrong with this person. It's just that he's in a delusory state. He is slightly hallucinatory. He thinks he knows something about Dianetics and Scientology. And that is delusive. He will present a problem to you for this reason. You will think he knows something about Dianetics and Scientology too. And that is really the only reason he presents a problem to you. That is what is peculiar about this. The professional auditor is met everywhere by this person. A person who tells you glibly that he knows all about Dianetics and Scientology. We have heard many times of what we call book auditors. I've straightened out enough book auditor cases to know that book auditors exist. But I have not at any time ever bought 100% the idea that all somebody had to do was read a book and immediately became capable as an auditor. I've heard people doing this. I have heard people say that they have gotten remarkable results. I'm sure they have. We have to pursue our even tenor of our ways by going on and admitting that people can do this sort of thing. But the truth of the matter is, we have had book auditor after book auditor in at the foundations and here and examined them, hopefully extending to them a certificate with no strings attached. All he had to do was pass an examination, and they would have immediately been given an HDA or an HCA certificate. That's all, because they had done good work in the field. Although you haven't probably heard anything about this for a year, that is still a fact. Still a fact. We've always got to keep that door open, that somebody somewhere has read all the publications, knows his stuff, simply walks in, passes an examination, gives an example of good auditing, and gets a certificate, just like that. No training or schooling involved of any kind whatsoever. And we have examined sincerely, exactly in the frame of reference that this person has studied. And remember, one of the area examinations that Dr. Steves has is based entirely and completely upon the fact that somebody has heard some of the earlier tapes and read some of the earlier publications, and there isn't a single examination question in there that hasn't been adequately covered by the materials easily available to individuals. And these people walk in to take this examination, and you would weep. You would just weep. This is the person who has been expressing his opinion so gorgeously and so emphatesquely all over the field. This is the person who has been having such wonderful results with auditing. And just thee and me could say in a snide sort of way, oh yeah? What is the dynamic principle of existence?
Survive.
You know, because you've been trained. But how about the guy out there who passes this book auditor's examination? He doesn't pass it because he leaves it blank. Name the buttons of the chart of attitudes. If you just name a couple, we'd be happy. Name the basic definition of an engram. If he just say pain and unconsciousness, we would again be happy. What is a secondary? If he just wouldn't say it's what comes after a firstary, we would be very careful. I'm not running this person down. Don't get the idea of that. But I'm trying to tell you, a professional auditor, in training or already long since trained, that your activities are to a very marked degree influenced by this individual who believes he's an auditor and can audit. And I'm here to tell you amongst us girls that he can't. Now, a lot of people come along and say, well, I really know this subject. I can't put it down on paper, but I really know it. I'm not looking at anybody right now. I really know this subject. I can't put it down on paper. But I can't pass an examination about it, but I really know it. All right, if you can't put it down on paper, let me ask you verbally, what is the dynamic principle of existence? Give me the cycle of action of the messed universe. The what? All right, I'm being maybe catty by talking this way, but remember, all I'm telling you, all I'm giving you is the experience on the part of foundation and organization examiners who kindly and pleasantly and sweetly and without any strings attached would have simply handed a certificate out, swish, if the person could have passed the examination. And their experience has been that an awful lot of people think they are talking through and with Dianetics and Scientology, and these people are talking through their hat. That's about all you can say about it. How they get results, Lord only knows. A beautiful little piece of work, which a fellow did out of some of the work in one of the clinical courses, issue 31G of the Journal of Scientology, has gone completely begging. It is stacked on our shelves many, many feet deep. We would be very happy to roll up bundles of them and send them out to people if they would simply sit down and start in the first one and give me something that you might be able to think had some reality vaguely. We're not forcing you connected with it in the environment. Now, if it says any two people can do it, do you know that there are enormous numbers of people out there around the country and around the world who buy these publications? They don't buy that one. Now, they will buy one on either side of it, you might say. They will buy later ones and so forth, but that particular one is so devilishly specific as a straight wire situation. You know, it's all set up, boom. Now, the funny part of it is old self-analysis in its most unworkable form went like hotcakes. You know, it's just self-analysis. Self-analysis in Dianetics is a later revised publication. Self-analysis is the name of that first foundation publication. Well, that is a peculiar publication. It has been used a great deal. Somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40,000 copies of that thing have been circulated through the United States and the rest of the world. And when it was revised and became extremely workable, 2,500 copies of it were sold. Peculiar, isn't it? The acceptance level of the world at large of a complete and positively working system and organization of axioms and procedures which alter and change the condition of human existence is something that doesn't. It's the only conclusion that we can draw from this. The general acceptance level of terrific effectiveness does not really exist as a good acceptance level. They would much rather go down the street to a bucket shop and buy some psychoanalysis at $10,000 for 2 years' worth. Every once in a while, by the way, just as an aside, an auditor feels embarrassed by suddenly saying to somebody, well, it'll cost you $500 to get enough processing for me to do you any good. Well, he realizes he probably should have said $3,000, you know. He should have said this much. He shouldn't be embarrassed. The only other therapy available anywhere is psychoanalysis, 2 years' worth, conclusion at the end of the time, being careful. You know, the individual is brought in a condition where he can now be careful. He has to walk on eggs. This is the frame of mind that is arranged, usually a review of such people. And it has cost him $10,000. $900, on the average, is what it cost him. It cost him $9,436.49. That is the exact figure calculated from the returns and receipts and taxes and income tax reports of psychoanalysts. He spent $9,500, you might say, for nothing. For nothing! Because I certainly would not call the company of most analysts I know anything. All right, and an auditor's going to work with this person for 3, 4, 5 weeks, and at the end of 3, 4, 5 weeks, why, this person is going to have come to some conclusion about existence. He will be in better condition, and he will be able to front the world like he has never done before. He has also had as an added bonus, usually, the fact that he can't be killed, which is quite a relief to most people. And he has had good company during the period. So remember then that $3,000 for a processing series would be very, very slight. It's just one third of the nothingness that psychoanalysis hands you for $10,000. All right. The professional auditor, that's just an aside, something I'll probably forget to mention again. The person who believes he knows something about Dianetics and Scientology, believes he knows something about auditing, is usually predicating his conclusion upon the study and practice of some other therapy earlier. He knows that he can have some conversance with human beings on the level of psychology. And he then and thereafter evaluates Dianetics and Scientology from the standpoint of psychology. Or he knows he has had some luck with people in the field of chiropractic. These are occasionally workable things, you see. I mean, it's not a total blank like psychoanalysis is. And psychoanalysis might not be if they practice it, by the way. He had the same problem. They practice it like Freud taught it. The end of one of his books says, nobody ever practices this like I taught it. Therefore, it's going to flop. He says it in very scholarly German, but he says it. And this person believes he knows something about this and actually would absorb a tremendous amount of data on the subject without being cognizant of what that data is. This is the most peculiar and baffling thing. The communication of livingness and life. Communication on the subject of livingness and life is so intensely restimulative to the normal individual, whoever he is so intensely restimulative that this individual cannot absorb the data. And you say to him, say, we really got something here. The dynamic principle of existence is survival. And this fellow says, gee, that's real interesting. Hippocrates once said, relative datum, that a patient had to tell about his operation five times before he was really well. Relative datum. The worship of the sun god Ra was accomplished by going forth at dawn and saying, O Ra, thou in thy glory, comparable datum. All the fish in the ocean mostly have tails. Comparable datum. You should never eat watermelon pickles after you have drunk beer. Comparable datum. You get the idea? A equals A equals A equals A. Here you take a scientific fact that's got the deadliness of a ray gun. And they say, well, we know all about that fact. Cap, pistol, water, pistol. No differentiation. Now, you today have none of you having real difficulty with Conlang. We ask auditing questions and we do processes which are intensely interesting from the subject of Conlang, because they can produce Conlangs on practically anybody, you know? You ask him the question and the guy, he knows he hasn't got a communication lag when talking to his fellow man, and he says, So here we have this interesting, this tremendously fascinating thing called Conlang. And if you were com-lagging around to your fellow man in the normal course of human existence, he walks in and he said, how would you like to go to a show tonight? And you were to say, I don't like the coat you're wearing. Today, at your state and level of process, you couldn't imagine yourself doing that, could you? Well, that's normal. How are you going to feed this guy any data? In addition to this A equals A equals A, comparable datum, ray guns equal cap pistols equal a kitten sneezing. How are you going to feed him any data if you're also going across, which is part and parcel of the same thing, a comm lag, an incoming comm lag, an outgoing comm lag, a reproducing comm lag, all these comm lags. You know, we're so used to them in auditing sessions, we laugh about them so much, they are so amusing in general, that we don't get around enough to find out that they're normal as hell. I went down to a fellow the other day, and he was busy shuffling some Christmas presents and so forth out to the customers and so on. And I said, have you got something here for a two-year-old child? And this fellow looked at me, and he says, well, how old is your child? I said, well, have you got something for a two-year-old child? And he said, well, is it a boy or a girl? And I thought that was secretary, you see. And he says, well, he said, now how about this over here? And shows me an erecto set. And I said, well, isn't this for an older child? Yes, he says, but how old is your child? It wasn't that we were talking too quietly. I actually asked him the question by count, because I was counting it like this. And I exhausted my fingers, and I had not yet gotten an answer. But just as I was leaving the store, not having bought anything, he looked at me rather fixedly, and he said, you know, all of our stuff for two-year-olds is in the back of the store. It had started to leak in. And I'll bet you if we'd cross-questioned him, we would have found out that he thought that was his own idea. That some inspiration had just occurred there, which gave him a hunch. A hint would have been the next step on the gradient scale. He would have realized that I had given him a hint. All right. As we look over the comm lag situation, as we look over the data, as we look over the fact that people are very often deeply rooted in earlier therapies of one kind or another, which to them have given them a lot of wins or a lot of loses, equally detrimental, that they're evaluating from that basis, and that they're saying they know about it simply because it is not the thing to do to go around saying you're stupid. And if we look at it from that basis, we realize how very, very few people in the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have some cognizance of Dianetics and Scientology, we actually recognize how much they really do know about something. We have, remember, examined the best, and we have been willing to give them a certificate, and the certificates are still here, and they have never been given away, merely because the fellow had to get a passing grade on the basic examination. He even could have come back and taken the examination. I mean, any kind of an arrangement you could think of, and yet he did not get his certificate. Well, I can tell you that if he did not get his certificate, then he did not get his results with Dianetics and Scientology, and we don't know what he was doing. See? We wouldn't know then what he was doing. All right, the very fact of interest in Dianetics and Scientology is in itself a very good manifestation as far as somebody's concerned. He gets interested in this. It shows that he's looking for a way out. He's perfectly willing to be open-minded about it. Let's not credit him at the same time with complete wisdom on the subject. So you, as professional students, during this coming week, are going to run into an awful lot of people who are really sharp. You know, they're really sharp. They're not professionals, but they're really sharp, you know. They know all about it. They've gotten terrific results. The last time they told this fellow's id to regurgitate and so forth, they got the most asponding respondo that you ever saw in your life. That's how much sense it would make if you took it apart. Why am I telling you anything like this? Why should I? Why should I be this snide about people? Mostly because the years have made me so. You see no faintest trace of bitterness in this, but you do see a little bit of care. Care to be taken with an auditor under training that he doesn't get out without knowing what he's doing. If he knows what he's doing, believe me, he can do fantastic and wonderful things, if he knows what he's doing. It is a shame and a crime to educate anybody in the field of Dianetics Scientology. Now, to bring them that close into really knowing what they're doing without actually giving them the information, without actually getting through to them how to do it, what to use, and so on. That is a shame. We saw this, by the way, in an advanced clinical unit a short time ago, a fellow who had been going round and round in Dianetics, but who actually never had gotten very sharp on the subject of Dianetics. Never had. Actually went through the unit, and for 6 weeks there was very anxious for data on a sort of a relay basis. He himself was not picking up the data, but he was putting it down in such a way that he could give it to a student or something like this. The data was not for him. He was not available, really, while he was being trained. And we gave him processing. We brought him quite a little way up the line. He's a lot better shape. He knew a lot more when he went away. But it was actually a shame that this individual went away not knowing that the materials he had really worked. That was a shame that this occurred. However, this fellow was in a hurry. There was not such a thing on schedule for him as retraining. There was not such a thing as hanging over in a unit until he himself knew, and none of his fellow students knew how terrible that guy's case was. The guy was an interesting mock-up, which was doing the rational and sane thing. He, as a person, was actually almost a circuit. And where he was, it was pretty hard to tell. And the 6 weeks he got of processing were not enough to break through this. And I think they were not enough to break through this because his fellow students were, for the most part, fresh in Dianetics and Scientology. They were very fresh. They had not been with it very long, see? They had no great cognizance of cases. They didn't have an evaluation of this sort of thing. The fellow sounded and sounds today so rational. Of course, today he has some slight feeling like there's something more he should know. He does have this feeling that he ought to go out and use it this way now, and maybe something, well, we don't know, but it might. Of course, it'd probably work better if we varied it. Well, no, we will work it this way. You see, we've at least got him faced up to the probability that he will work 8C, for instance, as 8C. We've got him faced up that far. And if we've gotten him faced up that far, he will not be able to work 8C for 3 or 4 months on various people and so forth without getting a lot of it himself. And the next time we see that boy, he will be in pretty good shape. All right. Now, here is something of great interest, something that nobody has entirely recognized, even if you're told it, and that is that case level depends upon the ability to express a pan-determinism across the field of human ability and aberration. If an individual can exert a pan-determinism over any field, believe me, it has not the ability to worry him. If you remember, you might have a modern car which has occasionally given you a bad moment in driving. You know, it's occasionally given you a bad moment. You took the corner and you took it all right and you landed upright at the other side of it, but it almost two-wheeled around the corner on you. You know this sort of a feeling. That's because you don't have a complete pan-determinism over cars. You might be able to handle that particular car, but you go down the road and you see somebody pull a very fine boo-boo with an automobile, and right away it tells you that you don't have complete control over cars, you know? That's why they get the second cross of death after they get the first one. If that first cross simply tells the motorist, look, you don't have control of your automobile. See? It's saying you don't have pan-determinism across cars. All right, if this is the case, that pan-determinism could actually bring about death, you can get this view a little bit more when I ask you whether or not a tricycle worries you particularly. Do tricycles worry you? Don't worry you. Well, you probably have pan-determinism about tricycles. You get the notion? You see what this is? Yeah. All right. Do spoons worry you? What is the essential difference between a spoon and a car? They both move around and they both are under somebody's control. Well, a spoon doesn't worry you particularly. But a car might. That would be simply a matter of pan-determinism across spoons, wouldn't it? In other words, nothing can worry you which you can change, start, and stop. That's all it boils down to. Nothing can worry you, really, that you can start, stop, and change. And if you, as an auditor, can take other minds than your own and start, change, and stop them along various lines, if you can make people have abilities which before were pretty smothered or they didn't have at all, if you can make people well, if you never got a moment's processing, you would all of a sudden blow clear one day. This is a certainty. You see, you're exerting pan-determinism, continually pan-determinism.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
The only thing bad that could happen to you is you would run into people who would consistently and continually resist auditing. And you would might start eventually auditing a little bit compulsively because so many people had resisted. But what do you know? Communication processing shows this up as one of the first things that happens to an auditor when his case is audited on communication processing. How interesting. I mean, the resistances people put up to auditing, and how he has a cute little ridge by this time that's sitting right here, which is very ready to audit him. See? Click, click. Now, this is simply an individual's inability to exert control in one particular field, which flips back at him. Actually, today, because of two-way communication process you have, this happens much less often. You can bring a person into auditing and bring them into a session so easily that a lot of times, if you really wanted to be covert about it, they would never know they were being audited. If you just went on working upon the basic principles of Scientology, you went right ahead working on these basic principles, and you simply audited them, at the same time carrying on a two-way communication with them, it would take some very clever doing, but you might wind up, somebody all of a sudden might tell you, a few days hence, all of a sudden say to you, you know, it's a very funny thing, I used to have lumbosis, and I don't have lumbosis anymore. I wonder how this could have happened. It must have been salicylic silly acid. Here's control over such things. If an auditor is a good auditor, he never has to worry much about aberration. He can control it. Why should he worry about it? It makes a nice game. Therefore, if you start somebody into auditing, you should train them all the way across the board, shouldn't you? It would be a mean thing to do to let a student get away without at least coming up to a point where his training would continue. By this, I mean he would use the processes he had been taught. He might not himself have tremendous conviction on these things because he hasn't seen them work on somebody very drastically, but he at least knows them well enough and knows well enough that he should continue using this process and knows well enough when to use this process that he will use it and will arrive at that certainty. Now, that's the least we'll settle for, the very least we'll settle for under any level of training today. He knows the process, knows how to use it. He's certain enough about it so that he will use that process. And this will at least produce results for him. And these results themselves will bring the aberration, psychosomatic illness, and disabilities or inabilities which he faces will bring these things under control. And if we could do just that much with everybody, this would be terrific. But if we do any less than that, we have done a very, very grave and terrible thing. See what we've done? We have brought the person up to a point where he doesn't know that he knows, but he now feels that something in this particular field might possibly work, but he doesn't know that he has the answer to it. See where we're going here? And so the unfortunate part of it is that although this is a sad thing, although you have to release materials, make them broadly available, keep people advised who are interested, although you have to do this, one of the reasons why you have to do this, by the way, is so the material itself will not get stashed or only be in the hands of a few people, so it'll still be alive, so it'll still be sitting somewhere, regardless of any catastrophe or disaster. That material can still sit there. You've got to release this material. You've got to place it into people's hands. You understand? Now, the idea is to place it into their hands well enough or smoothly enough so that they can achieve some benefit from it, in spite of the fact that you're not training them. And that is one of the oddest problems which we face in Scientology. The placing of materials in hands which are not trained hands, which very likely, in the absence of auditing, in the absence of good, clear practice of the exact principles which are laid in their hands, will alter and vary the material in such ways and directions that it will not produce results for them. And when it doesn't produce results for them, we have actually condemned somebody to a very, very bad state of beingness. We've demonstrated to him that he could not control human ability. Woo, what an overt act. All right, my shoulders are wide. I'm responsible, mea culpa. It has to be done. There isn't any solution for it that I have at this time, except maybe to write more simply, to write more directively, to write more communicatably. And so by doing that, at least make more data arrive in people's hands than would have before, just from a standpoint of how much communication was accomplished by the piece of writing. by the formula given, so forth. In other words, try to accomplish communication in the absence of training. To date, we have never accomplished it. That's what I meant to tell you at the beginning. We've never, never accomplished this. It's almost impossible to preserve an individual's self-determinism, at least, to let him think over the information he is given, to throw this information to him, adrift in an enormous sea of facts, and hope that it hits one way or the other, so as not to give him discouragements and failures which will decrease his determinism over psychosomatic illness and human aberration. That is the problem that is faced. And it is by these congresses that we attempt to solve this problem. And that is what we're heading for. A congress never under any circumstances could be considered to be a solution to training. Under no circumstances whatever could it be considered as a substitute for training. Just because somebody has come to two or three congresses does not mean he has been trained. But some odd and peculiar things happened in the June Congress. I gave a talk which was off the tape, informal, and off the record. This was evidently a highly acceptable sort of a way to address the people. I more or less walked down front, and I told them about spotting spots and remedying havingness. It was the last hour. It wasn't even part on the tape. You wonder that this 1 hour seems to have gone home. The 1 hour went home, because it was preceded by about 20 hours of pound. They remembered that 1 hour. And I got letters all over the place. I got more doggone letters from people who had been to that Congress saying they had used this process, and something in the 17 or whatever many hours preceded that last hour's talk had given them some notion that when you said do a technique, it should be done that way. They'd gotten this feeling, you see, out of it, sort of intuitively. And when it came to that last hour's talk, they used it, they applied it, and they went back and they started picking up people's psychosomatic illnesses at doing things to re-demonstrate their own control over human aberration. And a lot of them did it. And it was very successful. But I wouldn't say that these people who were using that were very conversant with Dionysian Scientology. I really wouldn't say they were. But they were a lot more conversant with the human mind than anybody else in the country. You understand? They were a lot more conversant with the human mind. Almost anybody in Dionysian Scientology is more conversant with the human mind than anybody in the field of psychiatry. And anybody in the field of psychology. You see that? So this puts them way up here, see? When I tell you they aren't any place yet, you begin to appreciate it after a routine course of training or something of the sort. You all of a sudden run head on into a case which is going clink, clink. And say, Ron didn't say anything, the instructor didn't say anything about somebody who's going clink, clink. And every time I try to process this fellow, all he does is stand and look at me and say clink. Wasn't covered in the textbook, take some desperate and extraordinary solution in order to solidify this. And then, so you fool around with it, and you do this and that, and you get very desperate about the whole thing, and you do this and that, and the fellow does still going clink at you. Only this time he's doing it at a high-pitched scream. And you finally get the idea, conclusively, that perhaps might be a good idea if you went into two communication with him. And you did that, and you say, well, it might be a good idea to keep this doing, to do some step A of 8C with him. Might be. So, here we have the problem of getting a person into the threshold of doing something that will tell him that he now knows. How do we get a person up to that threshold? That's a rough deal. You've almost created homo novus, or maybe you have. At the moment, he just gets his toe vaguely across this threshold, see? He gets his toe. You know, maybe if I do it this way, this result will occur. If this sort of a certainty will come through to him, maybe you've tipped the scales right at that point. Well, we have our first and foremost idea, then, back of Congresses, and that is to take people who are not trained or who will not be trained, and because of their conversance with data, still give them enough information so that some of them at least will put their toe across that threshold, and in doing so will employ the processes more or less as given to achieve enough results to make it very definitely worth their doing, you see. In other words, give them some control over pandeterminism so the liability of having put the information in their hands doesn't boomerang on them or on us. That's the first purpose of a Congress. The second purpose is to take people who have been trained and straight across the boards, give them the hot dope, and bring them right on up to date, if possible. See? As far as possible, bring them up to date of where we are in research and investigation. Now, writing an investigation will continue. This is inevitable. But it is at the most fantastic point today that I ever thought could be reached. I couldn't envision this sort of a point of certainty. And at this forthcoming Congress during this week, I'm going to take the materials which have been developed to date, and I'm going to cover them rather rapidly. I'm going to cover them punched up enough so that some of them will at least hit home and stay there. And I'm going to cover them rapidly enough, and yet, I hope, simply enough, so that these two goals can be accomplished at one and the same time. One, to take the person who doesn't know anything about Dianetics and Scientology and thinks he does, to bring him up to where maybe a little closer he knows something about Dianetics and Scientology, you see. He really comes into where he might know something about it. That's a game, you see. And the other one is to bring old students, graduates, and so forth, up to a level on research and investigation. And a third one, to try with a little group auditing, simple or complicated, to bring people's case level up a little bit higher. And a fourth one, to continue the training of use guys, all of you. See? They have to have all of these things, otherwise it would not be a successful Congress. Now, there are odds and ends that I will be going over in a Congress that I would never teach you in class. But more important, when I go over this material before a Congress, you will see, I hope, possibly, methods of presenting it, frameworks in which to fit it, which would serve you very well in trying to talk about it to people at large. And that is the one thing which I wish you would keep your eye on during this coming week. If you look at it now, Dianetics or Scientology, if you look at Scientology now from the standpoint of how do you communicate it, I wouldn't set myself up as a paragon of virtue on how to communicate it, although I'm the only one that has to any great degree. There's still enormous improvement can be made. You will at least know how to communicate it a little better to groups of people that you will be intimately connected with and who will be partially informed, these people particularly, the partially informed, trying to bring them up so that they're less partially informed, more completely informed, you hope. And also, you will see these talks hitting the basis of telling it to the streetcar conductor. You see that these frames of reference. Now, all of those frames of reference will have to be there, or I will simply not be communicating to the Congress audience at all. You see? Now, you will observe, if you please, I will ask you to observe, during the breaks and that sort of thing, observe the people around. And find what. This is a little research project. It isn't for your education. It's for ours. All of ours. Yours and ours. and find what datum parked where. What were the communicating data? This is a fascinating field of research. It has more randomity in it than anything I know. Lots of randomity. What was the communicating data? Now, day after day, we worked here in Operation Phoenix trying to find the communicating datum that Phoenix would buy. And fantastic, just fantastic. They'd miss this one, they'd miss that one, they'd miss another one, they'd miss another one, they'd miss another one. And finally, I got this hot idea about good roads and good weather. Everybody's in favor of good roads and good weather. Said Christ spoke of immortality, good health, and wisdom. And that's really all he ever talked about. And during the church sessions on Sunday afternoon, the pastor has rather uniformly thrown these data at people. And when there were new people present, their ears went up like these emerging antenna that come out of these new cars, you know, flop. And they went away with this tremendous onslaught of data carefully parked in their medulla oblongata. This was news. Where do you communicate? What do you communicate about? There has to be some agreement before you can communicate. The communicating datum, the communicating data. In Operation Phoenix, the most communicating to date has been something on that order. It's been on that order, and that communicates. Let's collect some more of them on the Congress level. Let's find out what data communicated or what data does communicate to the people who come in here. Huh? We'll set this up as a little private project between thee and me. And when the Congress is through, let you have a list of them, huh? Let's turn them in. Let's see if we can break down a common denominator so that we can at least write a journal that will have appeal and will be of assistance to you as a professional auditor. Because what will we put in this journal? We'll just repeat the data you've collected. Get the idea? Because we found out that communicates. Well, what communicates? So you've got a week's research project, which would be intensely beneficial. And I hope that on next Monday, you will have, next year, that you will have a list of the data that you thought communicated or discovered by talking to this one and that, that you thought communicated out of the lectures to the people there, or this is two categories of data, and category B, the data which you thought you were able to communicate to the people. Remember, the category B, you might have communicated better than I did, you understand? But category B finds you as a participant in the game, not an observer. It's probably less accurate. You've depended upon the suddenly startled look on the person's face. Well, they might have just remembered they left their electric iron on. The data which is relayed by myself to that audience will find you in the advantageous position of being able to discuss something in the absence of participants, you see? In the absence of one of the players. So, what was the communication that went on? What did they communicate? What did register? We're very interested in this. We'll expect it from you Monday morning, okay? There will be a lot of data, which we will then coordinate, and we'll give you the results on sometime later in the week, because it has to all be added and multiplied and subtracted, you know? And we will then know. Now, for heaven's sakes, confine your listing to a few words. Confine your listing. These people are really struck with the idea there was a difference between win and lose. You know, you're in for a little adventure. You're in for a little adventure. Because you are going to be flabbergasted, I know you will, here and there. you will be fascinated by what communicated, but more particularly with what they didn't know. Something has just been around gathering mold. It has just been hanging there, you know, and nobody's been paying any attention to it at all for years. And it just comes in as a piece of the stuff which was relayed to demonstrate something else, and all of a sudden, somebody is terribly struck with this, that an individual has a mental image picture which he sometimes looks at. You know, that is awfully interesting. Well, I'm being a little bit sarcastic here. My ARC is not very high at this level, because I face a good, hard week's work. Good hard work this week. I don't much look on it as work. It's a lot of fun because I don't know how to work anyhow. I never bothered to learn. All I learned was how to get things done occasionally. That's a different thing. I had a fellow one time try to teach me how to work, but he kept sitting down all the time while he was trying, so I abandoned studying at his heat. Now, where we have a great many people together, this is the other mission I wish very much that you could accomplish and help accomplish. Where you have people gathered together who have come from far and disrelated spots in the country, you find that these people are bringing in a great many pieces of misinformation, which misinformation individually, fitted together collectively by all the people present, becomes misinformation. They want their engrams run out. They want their communication breaks with me, with you, and with the organization run out. They want to get rid of that horrible auditor's code break, that horrible litter break. They want to get this point clarified and that point straightened out, one way or the other, or they simply want to spread more misinformation. Now, whatever the mission there, during the days of a Congress, you will discover the most amazing number of misinformations and rumors and so forth, extant the first day. But not much communication on them. They don't begin to burst forth till about the second day. And then they fly around in a very fancy fashion. But on the third day, everybody, although all these things might be true or might not be true, everybody's coming up in tone and they feel a little better about it all. About the fourth day, to hell with it. Everybody's happy and ARC is good and high, and that didn't make any difference at all. Whatever that was, you see, it's rehabilitated to a very marked degree. Never fails to happen. Why? Because of the amount of communication present in a Congress. That all by itself, solves its own problems. So may I ask you not to get terribly upset with people when they give you the wild pieces of data which they'll give you. And don't bother to spend too much time explaining them. Right. Just talk to them. Don't bother to explain anything to them. Just talk to them. Make more communication in the middle of the Congress. You understand? Just make more communication. Whether you're talking about good roads, good weather, or the hardness or the softness of seats, of course, or the horrible auditor code breaks which you're pulled by, I don't care what you talk about, one way or the other. For God's sakes, talk. That's the bottom of it. Now, we'll just make lots of communication in this Congress. It's an amazing thing how much flies around, but there can always be more. I swear that if enough communication could be circulated at one of these congresses, everybody would go home clear. And the only reason they don't go home clear is because not enough talking was done. Now, one of the reasons that happens is the people themselves don't get an opportunity individually to talk back to me, and I spend an awful lot of time talking to them. Well, this in part is not totally bad, because remember, most of the people present have gone downhill simply because they did all the talking, and somebody else originating information is merciful and decent and a pleasant thing to have happen. You see, it sort of balances the books. Furthermore, they've been looking for answers for years and have gone into apathy on the subject, and I seem to be able to give them lots of answers. So they are very happy about this sort of thing. They've been looking for Mama to say okay for all these years, and I come along and I say the dynamic principle of existence is survive, and this they know is an answer. See, they've been looking for is an okay, and they get this one, so they're very happy about it. I'll even say okay. You might, I won't even vaguely try to describe to you what program and so forth. We'll go on to Congress or exactly what the outline of the lectures is. I'd be very happy to place in each one of your hands a complete outline of the lectures, but I don't know from Adam what they'll be. Beyond this fact, the book in charge of the Congress will be Dianetics, 1955. Dianetics 1955 will be the textbook of this Congress. And I, to a very marked extent, I'm going to cover Dianetics 1955 from cover to cover. The data in it, in those lectures. And that's all I'm going to cover. Now, a couple of you were sorting this book. And let me take this opportunity right now to thank all of you for your very, very good work on the book. You know, that book wouldn't even vaguely have been here or been produced for the Congress if you hadn't pitched in when you did and worked on it. So thank you very much from me to you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And say you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Okay, that's better.